My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
It's Arts and Seizures with your host, Mike Edison and Judy McGuire.
Crazy, crazy, crazy. It's a big Sunday.
Excuse me while I choke to death.
You're a modern day Philip Seymour Hoffman.
You're so, oh no. Man. Too soon, Daddy-O. Too soon. We just got the news 30 seconds ago.
The Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Over it.
The Philip Seymour Hoffman Memorial Show shall commence. But today, more importantly, is the greatest sporting event of all time, the Kitten Bowl.
And the Puppy Bowl.
Yeah.
A close second, the Puppy Bowl.
Penguin cheerleaders. I can't
Is that
wait.
True?
Yeah. I'm making dip.
Sickening.
Judy's making dip for the Penguin cheerleaders.
For my friend.
Iceberg lettuce, I hope.
No.
a nice wedge.
Maybe a baked brie with some apples. Who knows?
You're making dip with like Lipton soup mix?
No.
And some Breakstone sour cream?
It's hard to find that kind of lowbrow ingredients in Williamsburg.
Is that true?
Artisanal dried onion soup mix.
I could find something, dried onions on the pubes of chocolatiers.
I have a feeling today is going to be a good day.
Well, I'm just sad it's going to be our last Mike Edison day for a couple weeks.
Yeah, I'm going to be on the disabled list for a while, but we'll get to that later.
Okay, but first, let's welcome our guest, Michael Malice.
Internationally acclaimed superstar political memoirist, Malice.
New York Times bestselling author, whose new book is called Dear Reader, The Unauthorized Autobiography of Kim Jong-il.
It's true.
This is fantastic. I have been so excited about this book since you started the Kickstarter campaign, which I enthusiastically did not contribute to.
I did.
Unenthusiastically.
Hence my book. I have a copy of the book.
She has it in hand.
Well, there you go. That's proof that the Kickstarter works.
It did work. I'm the first person to deliver on their Kickstarter.
No, I think Amanda Palmer delivered, didn't she?
Yeah. Well, the book looks fantastic, and mazel tov.
Thank you so much. It's great. I'm very, very, very proud of it.
All right. So for everybody out in Radio Land, tell us about this unauthorized autobiography.
So by nature, I write books, help celebrities write their own autobiographies. So my friend gave me the idea, hey, you should do Kim Jong-il's autobiography. So usually when you do an autobiography, you sit down with the person, interview them, you help them write, so on and so forth. I couldn't do that with the dear leader. He's deceased, and they would not let me. But he's left voluminous writings, and there's many books written about him and in North Korea. So basically, I just adapted all the stuff, 60 books in total, hundreds of articles, thousands of years of Korean history, and I did a first-person account of his life. And it works out perfectly because he was born at the end of World War II and died in 2011, so his life, it covers the history of North Korea. So there are no pop books out there that tell you everything you need to know about the country until now, so you can fairly say this is the greatest book about North Korea ever written.
and we will. Now, you've actually been to North Korea.
I have been to North Korea. I highly recommend anyone who's even moderately interested to go. It's legal. It is completely safe. If you killed someone, you would just be deported. And everything you will see is interesting. You will not have a moment where you won't be stimulated or be like, what am I looking at?
What were your impressions like when you got there? How did it differ from what you thought it would look like?
The craziest part is that they don't have electricity, so you're in a metropolis without electricity. So it's just, that's something that's very hard to describe or wrap your head around. And also the fact that everything is shabby. There's a fly everywhere. There was even a fly in the plane. There's a crack everywhere. The sidewalks. So it's in a state of disrepair. Everything has a little scent to it, like a basement, which is hard to describe. But it's just absolutely, absolutely fascinating.
You've got to explain this no electricity thing a little bit more.
Okay.
What do they do at night?
And
whatever they're told.
Okay, one thing we should sort out here too, because I mean, so far we're having a nice laugh about your book, which is obviously a great. I mean, it is funny, but it's this is not a funny book, and it's not a funny story, and it's not a farce. It's not a satire.
It is a farce.
Well, it's...
So people ask me, is this a satire? And no, I'm playing it straight. However, when you play what they present as the truth to be straight, that is farcical. You know, when they tell you that Korea is the first government on Earth, when they tell you that of all the nations in the world, Korea is the only one that has had a pure blood for 5,000 years, that is something that is completely farcical. And a lot of their stuff is farcical. However, to their great credit, and this is something I was very surprised to learn a few people know, they, instead of sweeping things on the rug, they have answers for all the criticisms of them. So they in the book, I put forward, you know, the objections to North Korea, and he addresses them head on, and their propaganda takes it on. Of course, it might not be true, but there is certainly logical coherence to what they say, which, frankly, I think makes it more chilling rather than less.
Definitely. I mean, I'm looking at the back of the book because I didn't get a chance to read it yet since I just
got it. It's brand new, hot off the presses.
Can you just explain his miraculous rainbow-filled birth? I don't understand that at all.
Well, a lot of the North Korean propaganda takes their cues from Christianity, of course.
Judy doesn't understand because she's an atheist, so she doesn't understand this
whole
concept.
I'm sure she was raised knowing a lot about the Bible, you know? Yeah, I'm
Jesus,
sure
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph.
Yeah.
These things happen all the time, Judy.
So they do have a Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. There's a North Korean trinity, which is Kim Jong-il, the son, Kim Il-sung, the father, and his mother, anti-Japanese heroine Kim Jong-suk, who's always pictured with a gun in her hand because she was a crack shot. So they're very heavy militaristic. So when he was born, Kim Jong-il, there was a new star in the sky, and all these miracles occurred, and everyone was so excited because it was the prophecy that this son would come to defeat the Jap devils. And when he was born, the Jap devils were quaking in their boots. So they very, very heavily borrow from Christianity. In fact, Kim Il-sung, the founder of North Korea, was, you know, had missionaries in his family. And Pyongyang back in the day was known as the Jerusalem of the East because there was so much Christianity there. Of course, once they took over, they would preach that Christianity, which teaches you to turn the other cheek, is just a way to make a nation weak, and these people are poison, it must be killed, and they were killed.
What about how does the son compare to the father?
Well, that's a very, very interesting.
The son, the incumbent dictator.
You mean Kim Jong-un?
The current.
Well, this is the third one. You know, we're on right now, the third generation. Right, Kim Il-sung, who founded the country, and Kim Jong-il, who I wrote about, and then Kim Jong-un, the current one. The current one is really kind of a tricky situation because, you know, Korea is a very, very kind of respect your elders. You know, like many East Asian countries, society. So the fact that there's this like 30-year-old kid running the show, even people there, you know, they're not brainwashed. They can think for themselves very readily, and they understand this is something that's just kind of even unprecedented in North Korean standards and pretty wacky.
So why was he selected?
Okay, so basically, Americans think that North Korea is governed by something called the DPRK Constitution, but it's actually governed by the Ten Commandments of Kim Il-sung. And the Tenth Commandment is, thou shalt follow through the revolution through the generations following the Mount Paektu bloodline. So, you know, people think of North Korea as a communist country. They don't identify as communist any longer, and basically they have every element of fascism. And one of the elements of fascism they follow through is purity of the blood. You know, they're preserving Koreanness while the South Koreans are being raped by Americans and given AIDS by our AIDS-filled soldiers and turning the women to prostitutes. So the fact that he had Kim Jong-il's blood in his veins is really what made him take over, plus his aunt, Kim Jong-il's sister, is behind the scenes kind of managing the show. Whose husband just got killed, you know, was killed.
Right, she was spared.
That's her husband. I mean, she drove her daughter to suicide. This woman is no joke. So, and they also have a caste system based on the circumstances of what your grandparents are doing in the 50s. They had something called the Understanding People Project, which is a great Orwellian term. So basically, they interviewed everyone in the country, literally everyone, determined what your family was doing up to the second cousins, and based on that, you were given a ranking, like a credit ranking, based on your loyalty to the state. And that determines whether you go to college, whether you get married, all these things purely based on the circumstances of your blood.
Kind of like Planet of the Apes. You got your orangutans, you got your gorillas,
yep.
You got your chimpanzees,
but they have
the educated class, and then there's the giver of the law, of course.
And they have the core class, the wavering class, and the hostile class, and it determines where you live in the country, and the hostile class were in the Northeast, and when the famine hit, they weren't delivered any food, because, you know, why give them food? Because they're going to be hostile to us.
But they're not in concentration camps.
No, but so, they're effectively, they're blockaded from the world, and they're denied food, so, I mean, it's not that much better.
So, well, what can we actually believe? I mean, we hear this news about the incumbent who threw his uncle to a bunch of dogs, and we hear that he killed his whole family. I mean, I'm very wary to believe anything at all I hear regarding North Korea, no matter what the source at this point.
Right. Well, that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, and you could go to Kim Jong-il book to look at .com to look at it. Everything they do make...
Nice.
Well, you're welcome. Everything they
Kim Jong-il.book.
KimJongIlBook.com.
Book.com.
KimJongIl.book. Yeah, he invented a new domain extension. No, everything that they do makes sense. And there's two types of ways of calling someone crazy. Crazy means someone who's erratic and doesn't make sense and they just do random things. But crazy also means delusional but predictable. And they're very much the second and people think they're the first. And if you... You know, you can kind of predict what they're going to do. So the thing with the uncle and his family being killed, they have something called the Yonggoje, which means in North Korea, when you go to prison or to the camps, they take three generations of your family. They've been doing this for decades. The thing is, when you're in the camps, you don't know which one of you got you sent to the camps. Because they just take, the families vanish in the middle of the night. So there's no trial. They just, the cops come at your door, take the three generations, and now they don't even tell. Some people aren't sent to the camps for life. They get released after a while. But you don't know who did what.
Does that turn people against other family members? Like, do they... I mean, what are the camps like? Obviously, that you didn't go on a tour of those in North Korea. I mean...
The camps are... You know, I hate this that when people do these kind of suffering competitions, like, which is worse, slavery or the Holocaust? But, I mean, this is on the par of anything the Nazis had. I mean, children, they still have to go to school, and then they have to report to work. But, you know, children, if they have corn in their pocket that they stole, are beaten to death in front of their class. You know, if you are raped, you're not allowed to have sex with a guard, so you, the woman, will be beaten to death. You know, they send men to mines where they will never see sunlight again, like literally. So it's an absolute nightmare. And the fact that people want to talk about Dennis Rodman and not this is just something I can find completely baffling.
I agree. And I want to reinforce again that the idea of the unauthorized autobiography of Kim Jong-il sounds very funny. It sounds like classic National Lampoon.
And
kind
it is
of thing.
Funny.
Well, of course, it's farcical.
It's hilarious.
Well, it's
yes.
farcical because of the propaganda and everything else. But the reality of this country is not a joke.
And that's right. And then one of the funnest things about this book is having him in that same gleeful tone where he talks about his birth, talk about, you know, censorship. You know, the metaphor I have him use is like, look, you don't have rotten food in your cupboards. Why would you have books full of outdated ideas, right? That's not censorship. That's progress. So it's the same. I wanted to keep that fun pop tone because it's such a dark story. And I think that kind of adds to it when you're listening to this, like, maniac, just be like, it's great that we don't have concentration camps. We have camps where people are concentrated because that double talk is something that's very unique to them.
There's a certain glee to the way they run
this
country.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
And if you listen to these guys, listen to the propaganda, and listen to the way they refer to themselves.
Right.
It's a real cult of personality, of course.
Of course. And they say we don't like to have bad news because it upsets the people. And what's interesting, you said that cult of personality. This was an issue in the 50s when Khrushchev took over in the Soviet Union. The Soviets started attacking North Korea being like, this cult of personality is nonsense. And they're like, screw you. We're the real Stalinists. You guys are traitors, you know. And they
pussies.
You know what? Khrushchev compared to North Korea is a pussy.
Yeah. One toke over the line.
Yeah.
You guys have gone too far.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a break and we're going to hear Engineer Joe's fantastic new record. And we're going to come back and talk about a little bit of pop culture in North Korea, some of the music.
Right, so
and
it's Arts and Seizures with our guest Michael Malice, Judy McGuire, is Mike Edison. This is the Big Ups. Can you dig it? Can You Dig It? That was The Big Ups, starring Joe Galarraga, King of the Engineers.
Congratulations, Joe. It sounds really amazing.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Right, so this is Seizures, and you're going to be out on tour, right, Joe?
Yeah, we're leaving February 22nd to go to the UK, so I'll miss you guys.
Awesome. Wow.
You can still listen to us in the UK, Joe.
Oh, I know. But I won't be here, you know, experiencing the magic.
Experiencing the beauty that is
They have
us.
The internet in the UK. Do they have the internet in Korea?
There's like less than 100 people in North Korea that are on the internet. But oh, they liked my book cover on Instagram, which is terrifying. I'm not kidding.
You've been officially approved?
I don't know. Maybe that person got in trouble.
Yeah.
So just whose radar are you on with this?
I really hate the pun there because I hope I'm not literally on anyone's radar. But they're very, very savvy of the internet and the rest of the world. They keep track of what's going on. Like, for example, there's some books I read as research that referred to crazy articles they had. And when I looked up these articles, they'd been pulled from the web. So they know what's going on and how people perceive them. They play into it. They play Americans like a fiddle often, you know, because if you convince other people that you're crazy, then anything, you can do anything, and then people are going to be scared of you.
Yeah. I mean, he just seemed, what is this?
This is some Korean music.
Is this The World Envies Us?
Yes, I believe it is. It's not The Big Ups.
It's like disco.
Well, it's amazing. These videos that come out of there are these like children or like virtuosic displays of music that are, you know, better than anything you're going to see in America's Got Talent.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, North Korea's got more talent, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, they really much scout the kids and teach them from an early age. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that particularly. I mean, these kids and the kids and their families are rewarded with food. So, you know what? I mean, it's better than some of these. I'd rather have that than the Gary Coleman experience.
You know, as we sit here at Roberta's restaurant eating the Beastmaster pizza, privileged round eyes that we are.
U.S. imperialists.
So looking at the back cover of your book, Kim Jong-il hated the Mona Lisa?
He did hate the Mona Lisa. In fact, I asked my mom.
Mona Lisa, that bitch.
I asked my mom, who grew up in the Soviet Union. You know, I was born there as well. And I go, can you guess why Kim Jong-il hated the Mona Lisa? And she took this 5-second pause and she goes, because its message isn't clear. And that's exactly it. Because the Mona Lisa is a cryptic smile, but art has to have a message for the viewer.
So true. Ambiguity is not something the fascists ever embrace.
That's correct. It's like, it's going to be confusing. And this might have been a masterpiece in its day and age. But nowadays, you know.
Just take one look at her and you know she's hiding something.
Yes. Cryptic. And where are the eyebrows? Where are the eyebrows? So there's a whole rant in the book about his art teachers teaching about it and he's just denouncing it and everyone applauds. This is him in middle school, by the way. Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to read this.
So what is with this whole Dennis Rodman boondoggle? I mean, how does this even happen? Why are people even paying attention? Why have they embraced him? And why has he not been called out on the carpet in the United States of America?
I'm not a particular fan of this president, but to me, the idea that anyone can go on TV and say, Kim Jong-un is waiting for your call, President Obama, is so reprehensible. Not even forgetting that Kim Jong-un's a dictator. I mean, this is someone who just literally killed his own family member. So, I mean, that enough is a deal breaker for me.
Yeah.
Let's also not forget that North Korea is the most racist country in the world, beyond belief. You know, it's the most homogenous country in the world. Those two things obviously go hand in hand frequently. So the fact that Dennis Rodman is on TV, I think, feeds into the stigmatization and the kind of this carnival aspect that goes around North Korea. But this carnival is really the problem, and that's not what we should be focusing on, in my view. I'd rather, you know, that they be not as wacky and be a little freer and not have to worry about their lives.
But one thing, I mean, one good thing about the Dennis Rodman bullshit is that it has a lot of people thinking, I mean, he has been given some trouble in the papers, and otherwise people wouldn't even read about North Korea because they're busy reading about the Kardashians.
Well, that's
stuff.
Not true, because right before Dennis Rodman went over, like Eric Schmidt, the head of Google, went over, and if you guys look on Google Maps, you can see all the concentration camps clearly marked. And North Korea, right after that happened, the Dennis Rodman stuff came out, and I know that was Vice, but also that's when they started threatening nukes, we're going to nuke Austin and all this other stuff. So they really knew how to change the subject, the conversation very well. And by the way, their official position about concentration camps is we don't use that term, so therefore there aren't any. That is literally their statement to the UN Human Rights.
It's a lot like Fox News. You know, what you do is...
It's not.
What you do is you tell a fallacy, and then you tell it again the second time. You reference your first reference as the source.
It is
not. And therefore, it's true.
It's nothing like Fox News. It's nothing like Mayor... I've had people compare him to Mayor Bloomberg and Schumer. It's just like, No.
I'm not being that far. But as a propaganda technique, I said it, therefore, it is true.
No, I don't think it's a propaganda technique so much as it's just Orwellian
tautology.
Yeah, it's semantics. right?
Like, yeah, well, that's it. That's what I'm talking about. I said it, therefore it is true. You know? I mean, and that's it. And it was on TV, therefore it was true. Like professional wrestling, like we're talking about.
Yeah.
If you saw it, therefore it's real.
Right, right. This can't all be staged.
Yeah.
Right. Right. They do have those potential.
It's sad. And again, I want to say that, I mean, the book is a farce, and it is obviously a very amusing idea, and it's great. And I think it's great. Congratulations. I think it was incredibly, great idea and well executed, but the reality is not, it's not funny.
And people don't understand the reality. That's what my book fills in. Because there's, again, the only other books about North Korea are either very, very dark and depressing, though superb, like Nothing to Envy is this wonderful book, or they're like kind of dense collegiate books, like Under the Loving Care of the Fatherly Leader, which is 900 pages and just a brick. So this is something you can read in the beach and or bathroom and get a complete understanding of the country and its history.
Did you understand when you started the project just how dark it would be? Did it change your opinion? What did you learn?
I did not have any idea how dark it really was. And then when I left North Korea, I was kind of crying on the plane. And I'm like, why am I crying on the plane? Why is this bothering so much? And I come from the Ayn Rand school where, like, you know, suffering is something to have contempt for. And I realized I had this kind of survivor's guilt, you know, because I was born in the Soviet Union. I'm Jewish. Those are two chances for me to be kind of incarcerated in a camp against my will. And the fact is, by flip of a coin, I got out and these people are still there 70 years later. So it's just something that, you know, it's just amazing that people are not, you know, taking very seriously. And again, the book is the context is serious, but the subtext is serious, but the context is not. So I mean, it's a lot of fun and a lot of LOL moments. Like, you know, when, you know, he reinvented the opera, he teaches you how to do magic correctly, how to
do
gymnastics correctly.
He was so busy.
But he really was, because everything that happens in that country is by a function of his will. Like, his will is the law. So his fingerprints almost literally on everything. In fact, they boast that if you have a map of his travels, it would cover the whole nation, because he's everywhere micromanaging everything. And these stories are hilarious, because the only way to make him great is to present the entire nation as being learning disabled, right? So he's trying to be an architect, and they say, we have the other architects, like, we have a plan, this tower will be the second tallest in the world. And he goes, let's make it the tallest. They go, we've never thought of that. My God, what a genius. This guy's amazing. I mean, that's what it takes to make him the smartest kid who ever lived.
I'm very interested in his ability to shrink time.
Yes, okay, this is great. So this is a story that I'm reading. So they say his father, during the years of anti-Japanese struggle, could shrink space, that he could teleport, right? They kind of allude to that. They don't translate those stories that much, because they know those are really crazy. So he learned from his father how to shrink space so he could shrink time. And there's a story. He's at a conference, and there's a speaker, and he's reading over notes, and people want his attention for signatures, for bills. And the speakers keep stopping, and he goes, why are you stopping? He goes, well, you're doing all these other things. He goes, no, I could do three things at once. And they said from that point on, Kim Jong-il didn't look at time as a plane, P-L-A-N-E, but as a cube, and that he had the ability to shrink time. When I told my friend this, she goes, does he mean multitasking? And yes, that's exactly what he means. And so even something, which I'm sure he's superb at, I'm sure every world leader is superb at, the fact that even something that mundane has to be presented
it's
in these magical and apparently no one in North Korea can multitask. It's unprecedented.
They can only do one thing at a time.
Yeah, he can't listen and read. Yeah.
So where can are you going to be taking this on the road at all? Can we come see you?
I'm setting up a talk at the Strand, and hopefully I'm going to be giving a talk at the Bitcoin Center also, of all places.
Before you're talking about, you're doing some Jewish press. And
I'm going to be on the Jewish channel. Yeah, I have to set that up,
too. Is there a strong connection somehow between the oppression in this book and the Jewish experience? Is that what's
most certainly, like, you know, when we wring our hands how the Holocaust happened, well, this is happening now, and people want to talk about some stupid basketball player.
Ooh, listen.
What is this?
Korean Fiddler? Children.
Oh, I thought Fiddler on the Roof.
It's not Tiki Disco today.
No, it's Kitten Ball and Puppy Ball today. Right, so, I mean, the Kitten Ball and the Puppy Ball not happening in North Korea.
That is true. They
do have kittens, though.
Very few.
Few kittens.
I mean, during the famine, I mean, it degenerated to cannibalism. I'm sure all the pets got eaten.
Yeah, I'm sure, like, most living things are looked at as a potential meal.
I mean, if you're at the point where you're eating saccharin just to fight hunger, I mean, I would, of course, not even blink about eating animals.
Is there a solution to this? I mean, going to be a political solution to help the people of North Korea?
There's no solution whatsoever. There was this Hemingway line where it said, how did you go bankrupt? And he goes two ways, gradually and then suddenly. And if you look at the Civil War, what happened to the slaves after the Civil War, it's like, yeah, they were freed, but like, how long did it take until they had any kind of semblance of normalcy? So it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. Sorry, there's no happy ending here.
Do you think Do you think that Kim Jong-un is like... more aggressive than his dad was? Do you feel like he's going to drive it to a breaking point sooner?
But I mean, my point is, if you are having a famine and you're perfectly happy with 10% of your population starving in the streets, that is a breaking point. I mean, you've doubled down and you said, I would rather have the state than people have food. And in fact, they even said, we don't want people to be able to feed themselves because that would take away their dependence on the government. So this was a conscious choice by them. They wouldn't let the UN see what the food was going and all these other things. So he was chosen. He's the third son. You know, he's the youngest. He was chosen specifically because of his loyalty to the regime. So he's absolutely going to double down. And in fact, you know, he's worse in a sense because Kim Jong-il battled his uncle for years to see who would be the one to take over. And Kim Jong-il won out, but he didn't kill his uncle. You know, he sent his uncle to be an ambassador, I think, to Poland now. So but again, it's the sister who's the problem in the background.
What about the two older brothers? I would imagine they should be watching their asses.
Well, the eldest one is the one who got caught in Japan where he said he was going to Disneyland, which was a lie. And the middle brother is gay or gay-ish. They call him, well, they say he's a sissy who's too much of a quote-unquote girl to take over such a militaristic country, Kim Jong-chul. And he's actually an Eric Clapton groupie who follows him around. You can't make this stuff up, I'm sorry. And the eldest son specifically said, we need reform. You know, we need more openness. And Kim Jong-il told him, if you want openness, open a window. So that was why he got passed over, which was kind of unusual.
In a sick way, loving Eric Clapton is sort of like fetishism of like weird Western music makes sense.
No, it's
when you don't have it,
no,
it's like...
It's fetishizing children dying.
Well, Eric Clapton's children dying?
Yeah, that's the song, Tears in Heaven, right?
He had his kid died.
Yeah, he fell out the window.
He was probably listening to Layla at the time. All right. It's been a great show. So, Judy, I'm sorry to say I'm not going to see you for a couple weeks. I'm going to be on the DL. All this hollering and hooting and chatting has left me at the mercy of the New York University Medical Center Voice Center. So Monday they're going to take some lasers and knives and Lord knows what to me. But I'll be back before you know it.
For our Academy Award show.
For our Academy Award show. So, Michael, you going to come and sit in for me maybe
Absolutely.
One week?
Absolutely. I'll be the mic. On the mic.
Excellent.
So back to Mike and Judy. Well, right on.
I have to get Michael Gonzalez in here one week. Mike Albo. Like, all our mics. Mike McPadden.
It's good. It's good. It's a very limited club.
Yeah.
It's very limited.
It gets well, listen, good work if you can get it.
Once again, it's Michael Malas. The book is Dear Reader. It's the unauthorized autobiography of Kim Jong-il. And tell us where we can find you on the interweb if you're in a free country.
I'm at michaelmalas.com, kimjongilbook.com. It's on Amazon.
And keep an eye. I'm sure we'll see you in the New York Times and Rolling Stone in 60 Minutes.
Or all three.
Definitely 60 Minutes.
And the movie?
It's in the works.
Have they seen Team America? Do you think they're sitting around watching Team America over there?
I think Team America. Well, I think Team America kind of put North Korea in the public consciousness.
That's
so there's
true.
Something to be said for that.
Yeah.
All right, America. Fuck yeah! Once again, it's for Judy McGuire, Michael Malas, Joe, the King of the Engineers, in the booth, ghosting his band, The Big Ups. This is Mike Ensign on Arts and Seizures. I'll see you guys in a few weeks. We'll come back next week to hear Mike and Judy.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.